Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Lamed Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur the second line from the top of Daf Lamed Aleph. However, before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side under our No Say, our topic heading, where we've written Sukkah Gezula. We'll be speaking about a stolen sukkah. Now, when we speak about a stolen sukkah, there are different possibilities. Number one, Tokef es Chavero. That's where the thief approaches someone that's sitting in his sukkah and throws him out of his sukkah and takes it over. Number two, Gozal Eitzim v'sikech bohem. A person stole wood, constructed a sukkah, and then put schach over them. A third possibility, but the Gemara will not deal with it. It is, however, found in Rashi, Dibur HaMasel Avol, Gozal Sukkah Ho'asuya Barosh Ho'agola, the theft of a portable sukkah. It's a built, constructed sukkah, but it's not sitting on the ground. Rather, it's on a cart. And you simply stole the sukkah that was on the back of the cart. The Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, Sukkah Gezula, Vamasakech Virshus Horabim, one who steals a sukkah, or one who puts schach over a structure in a public area, Rebbe Lezer Posel V'Chachomim Machshirin. Rebbe Lezer says he is not fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah, it's unfit as a sukkah, and the Chachomim say it's a kosher sukkah. Once again, in light of what we learned in our previous shir on Daf Lamed, we're not focusing on whether it's right or wrong to steal, to behave like this. The question simply is the mitzvah accomplished under what we call strict legal guidelines? The Gemara continues, Omar Rav Nachman, Machlokes b'shetokef es chavero v'hotzio misukaso. The machlokes we just saw between Reb Lezer and Lechomim involves a case of a thief, of a tough guy throwing someone out of his constructed sukkah. And it's under those circumstances that Rabbi Eliezer will tell you, you are not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. The brackets are here for skipping, so use your bracket length indicator, and you see we pick up a few lines later after the brackets. Avol gozal eitzim v'sikech bohem. If a person stole wood and constructed a sukkah, or he stole wood and then used the wood as schach over his own sukkah wall structure, divrei hakol, everyone will agree, even Rabbi Lezer will agree, ein loy elo demei eitzim. The victim, the original owner of the wood, has a mere financial claim, and the thief does fulfill his mitzvah of sukkah. So there, as we indicated in our introduction, there are two different cases of thievery in the context of sukkah. Throwing someone out of his already constructed sukkah, simply moving in, where you, the thief, did nothing as far as the structure of the sukkah is concerned, there you have a machloikis, Reb Lezer, telling you you're not yotzei. However, where the act of thievery was done on the schach, he stole wood and used the wood, the stolen wood, as schach, even Reb Lezer will concede that the thief fulfills his mitzvah of sukkah. As far as finances are concerned, so there's a debt that the thief has to the owner of the wood. He has to pay him for the value of the wood. Mimai, and how does the Gemara know this? How does Rav Nachman know this? Midiktoni, Dumi Yudirishus Rav. because the case of the Sukkah Gzula featured in the source was taught together with the case of someone covering a structure in a public thoroughfare. Ma Rishus Rabban Karka Lav Didei, who just like case of Rishus Rabban, the floor spoken of there, it was a public thoroughfare, it's not his own floor. Sukkah Nami, the case of Sukkah Nami Lav Karka Didei Hu, it's also a case where the thief doesn't own the ground upon which the Sukkah is built. That's the case of a thief throwing someone out of his sukkah. However, in the case of stealing wood and covering a sukkah that's already in the thief's own possession, his own land, that is different. That's not the case that Rebbe Lezer was saying puzzle to. Now, we have a bracketed section that we skipped. Let's go back over that. In the brackets, we have a double underline, and on the side, we indicate that we've double underlined Rebbe Lezer and the Rabbanon Litamayu. Here, each opinion is featured as being consistent with what they hold elsewhere. So Rebbe Lezer said that when you throw someone out of his sukkah and attempt to fulfill the mitzvah that way, you're not yotze, posel, Rebbe Lezer Litamayu. Rebbe Lezer is consistent with what he's said elsewhere. Domar ein odom yotze yidei chavosoi besukosoi shel chavero. A person does not fulfill his mitzvah of sukkah with someone else's sukkah. In other words, according to Rebbe Lezer, you have to be the owner of the sukkah. Even a borrowed sukkah, you will see, Rebbe Lezer says, you do not fulfill your mitzvah with it. Rebbe Lezer's approach to sukkah is very much like everyone's approach to the Arbas Haminim. With regard to the lulav, everyone agrees you have to be the owner of it on the first day. Rebbe Lezer takes that idea further and he carries it over to sukkah and says you have to be the owner of the sukkah. E karka nigzeles sukkah gezulahi. If you hold that karka lends itself to being stolen, then it's a stolen sukkah. And the Rabbi Lezer darshins the pasuk that says ta'asin l'cho regarding you must make your own sukkah means mishelcho, from something you own and not something that's stolen. The inami karka einan excels, the Gemara goes on to say that, and even if you hold that karka does not lend itself to being stolen, sukkah shu'ulahi, then legally it would be classified as a borrowed sukkah, and that too you do not fulfill your mitzvah with. As far as how to legally look at ground in terms of thievery, that's an extensive discussion in Maseches Bava Kama, but we won't get into all of that background. Rashi does make a brief reference to it. V'rabbonon l'tamayu, the Rabbonon in saying that a stolen sukkah, in the case of throwing someone out of his sukkah and you're taking over, you are yotze, you fulfill your mitzvah that way. The Amri, the Rabbanon hold, Odom yotze yedei chavoso besukasu shechavero. A person does fulfill his mitzvah of sukkah with someone else's sukkah, v'kakein and exelas, v'sukkah shulahi. And furthermore, the Rabbanon hold that ground is not something that lends itself to being stolen. And therefore, if you throw the owner out of his sukkah, it still doesn't become yours. At best, it would be considered borrowed, we'll call it forced borrowing. All the same, the Rabbanon don't require the sukkah to be your own sukkah in order to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah. And the rest of the Gemara we already read. That is with regard to stealing wood and covering and the thief covering his own sukkah with that. Everyone agrees, even Rebbe Lezer will agree, that you are yotze, you fulfill that way. We continue with the Gemara just a couple lines down where we left off earlier. Hahi Savta, there was an old woman, Da'asoy Lekame to Rav Nachman, and she came to Rav Nachman. And we have to just note that this woman had wood was stolen from her by the slaves of the Reish Galusa. The Reish Galusa was the exilarch, and he had servants, and you find the servants of the house of the Reish Galusa being referred to in a few places in Shas as being people that were of ill repute and capable of theft. And she was the victim of their behavior, of their actions. They stole wood from this woman, and she came screaming. And what did she say in her claim? She said, Omrole, she said to Rav Nachman, Reish Galusa v'kula rabbonin de bei Reish Galusa, the exilarch, and all the scholars that are assembled around him, Besuka Gezula Havu Yasvi. They are sitting in a stolen sukkah. So she was trying to claim that they are not Yotze, the mitzvah of sukkah. Tzavcha velo ashkich bo Rav Nachman. The woman screamed and he paid no attention to her. Omra lay. And she saw that he wasn't paying attention, so she reacted and said, she speaks in the third person, but she's talking about herself. She says, Itza, a woman, Davile Lavua, that her father, but it's a reference to Avram Avinu, her forebearer. She was a proud Jewess. And she says, a woman whose great-great-grandfather had Tlas Mea V'tamni Sori Avdi, had 318 servants. The Torah reports that Avram Avinu had a large cadre of servants around him. Tzavcha Kamaychu, she screams in front of you, V'lo Ashkechisubo, and you don't pay attention to her? Omar Luhu Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman turned to the Rabbonon that were surrounding him, and he said to them, Po'isa hi da. This woman is simply a loud lady. The Ein Lo Ela Demei Eit Simbol Vad. And all she has is a claim of the value of the wood. But as far as the claim on the wood itself is concerned, that is not hers anymore. The Rashi gets into some more background as to why that is. There's something called a Takonas Hashovim that's involved over here. And as far as rabbinic law is concerned, the theft of the wood was successful in the sense that even though it's not a nice thing to steal, their stealing accomplishes that the building of it into a sukkah makes it a kosher sukkah, but all there remains is a financial debt of restitution owed to the woman. But as far as the woman's claim as it being an illegitimate sukkah, that is not true. Omar Ravina, Hai Shura de Metalolosa, de Gzula. A shura is a beam of a sukkah that was stolen. And we're talking here about the construction of a sukkah using a stolen material. Avdi le Rabbonon takanto, the Rabbonon instituted a ruling that the victim, the original owner, has a claim only of money, and there is no obligation to take down the sukkah in order to give back the beam itself. And this takona is mishum takonas morish. Morish is a word referring to a beam. The idea here is that if someone steals wood in order to construct a structure, and part of the structure is a beam that goes across the top of that particular structure, if after stealing it, the thief would be required to return that beam, so he's not going to cooperate. He's going to feel, wow, I'm losing the entire structure that I put up just because I have to return the stolen beam. So therefore the Rabbanan, in order to encourage people to atone and repent, so they said, the beam can stay where it is, and all that's required is that the thief returns the value, offers financial restitution to the owner. The Gemara continues, Pshita, what Ravina is telling me, it seems to be obvious. My shno me eitzim. What's any different about this than the case of that the case that we had before of stealing wood and using it as schach? The Gemara answers that the case of Ravina is different. Mau detema. One might have thought eitzim shchichi. Wood that one uses for schach is very common, and therefore the original owner has no claim other than a financial claim of money. Give me the value of the wood that you stole to you, that you stole to use as schach. However, avol hai lo shricha, but a vikshura de metalalosa, this main beam that holds the sukkah together, is not something that's so common. It's you have to shop around before you find an appropriate kshura de metalalosa. And therefore, maybe the original owner has a stronger claim. And therefore, one wouldn't think on his own that the thief could get away with just giving back money. Komash Malon, therefore, Ravina had to tell me that even regarding the Kshura de Metalolosa, this main beam that holds the sukkah together, also we have this Takona, we call Takonas Morish, that it's enough for the thief to give the money back, and we don't expect him to take down the sukkah that he built with the stolen beam. Hani mili bego shiva. We say all of this within the 7 days of Sukkot. Avolabosu shiva, after the holiday of Sukkot, hodar b'ene. Then the original beam is to be returned. After all, the thief doesn't need the sukkah anymore. A little, just an editorial note, it's a bit of an irony here, but it nevertheless exists in real life, that here you have people that are interested in fulfilling mitzvahs, call them between man and God, at the expense, or at the same time, not being so considerate of mitzvos bein odom lechavero. And truth be told, you're dealing with two mitzvahs that are both isurei d'oraisa. But that's the way of the Yetzer Hara, sometimes making enabling people to rationalize their behavior and somehow putting those mitzvahs that we call bein odom lamokom on a higher pedestal. Unfortunate, but the Gemara always deals with reality, and that's part of reality. We continue. The Gemara just made a distinction between a sukkah during the holiday of Sukkot, where it would be too much to impose on the thief to return the beam, engendering the destruction of his own sukkah, as opposed to after the holiday of Sukkot. The Chibro Betina, if the thief, however, affixed the beam with cement, making it like any other permanent structure, even after Sukkot, after the 7 days of Sukkot, all he's required to do is return the money value, the offer financial restitution. Before we continue further in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, and we indicate that it lasts ad omit beis. Lulav the esroig hayovesh. We'll talk about the lulav and an esroig that are dried out. And in terms of how to categorize dried out, we say it's a chisaron in hodar. Hodar means something nice and pleasant, glorified. A dried out lulav or a dried out esrog we could not call hodar. The Gemara. Tona. Yovesh posel, a lulav that's dried out, is posel. Rabbi Yehuda machshir, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay. Now, we're going to see Rava in a firebox. And on the side, under our Mivneh, we've noted Rava presents the following. Machloikis, Rabbi Yehuda b'Chachamim, Belulav. Rava will claim that the machlokis we just saw is with regard to a lulav, where Rabbi Yehuda is machshir and the Chachamim pasal. The word lulav, you'll see in the Gemara, appears in a diamond. Avol, and we continue in our note. In contrast, be'esrog, Rava tells us, divrei hakol, everyone will agree, even Rabbi Yehuda, pasal. Deboinon hadar, that with regard to an esrog, everyone, even Rabbi Yehuda, says that you need it to be hadar. And dried out, we said, would not fulfill hadar requirement. As you go on in the Gemara, triangles will be used, and they will appear in different directions. These are kushios mishnei kivunim. There are questions coming from two different directions. That will become much clearer as we go into the Gemara. It's a little premature to give any detailed explanation, but suffice it to say, there are questions coming from different directions. Al divrei Rava benoigea lulav yesrog. We're going to be questioning what Rava claimed regarding the lulav and esrog in the context of the what is a machloikis and what is unanimous. Now we continue in the Gemara. Omar Rava, we're at the firebox. Machloikis belulav, the lulav that's yovesh, that is the point of machlokis. If you skip to the next diamond, you can see there avol esrog divrei hakol hadar b'inan. So the machlokis, and we've used the dashed underlining to draw your attention to that which Rava claims is controversial, and that which there is unanimity. So Rava says machlokis belulav. The Rabbonon Savri, the Rabbonon are of the opinion, the Rabbonon who rule that a dried out lulav is no good, they hold Savri, they hold Makshinon lulav le'esrog, that we are to compare lulav to esrog. My esrog boy hodar, just like esrog is required to be hodar, the pasuk uses the word hodar in the context of esrog. It says pre-eats hodar. And Rava is not applying to Hodar any alternative meaning. Rashi makes reference to some alternative meanings, but he does not. He takes the word Hodar at face value, Hodar meaning glorified, and in describing the Esrog, it's called in the Torah, pre-eats Hodar, a glorified fruit. So just like the Esrog needs Hodar, af lulav, according to the Rabbonon, boy Hodar. The Rabbonon equate lulav with the esrog. Rabbi Yehuda savar lo makshinon lulav leesrog. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the Torah does not compare lulav to esrog. Granted, the esrog needs to be hodar, but not so in the case of the lulav. Avol the esrog, says Rava, divrei hakol, everyone agrees, hodar bo'inon. Even Rabbi Yehuda says the esrog must be hadar. Rava has now made a few points. He told you that concerning the lulav there is controversy, and he also makes reference to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion on the matter. But with regard to esrog, he says everyone holds you do require hadar, Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda. Now, many of these points are going to be brought into question. And keep note of the order or the triangle direction. So we continue. If you notice, we have on the side a Roman numeral 1, and a number of lines later, Roman number 2. The number 1 focuses on that which Rava says regarding the lulav, and the Roman number 2 indicates that which Rava said regarding the esrog. So, to get a bit of an overview, let's focus first on the triangles. The first triangle, ubalulav lo boy Rabbi Yehuda hodar, Rava said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, lulav does not require hodar. Here we're going to bring that into question. Regarding esrog, what did Rava claim about Shitas Rabbi Yehuda? that it certainly does have to be hodr. The next triangle, the inverted triangle, it says, Ube Esrog mi boy Rabbi Yehuda hodr. Is that really so? That Rabbi Yehuda requires hodr by the Esrog? So you can see, these two triangles are bringing two points that Rava made into question. We'll be continuing this scheme of triangle use down Amud Beis as well. In the meantime, we continue with the Gemara text. The first triangle, Uba Lulav, Lo, Boy, Rabbi Yehuda, Hodar. And with regard to the Lulav, is that so that Rabbi Yehuda says it does not have to be Hodar? The Hotanan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yagdenu, Milamala. Rabbi Yehuda spoke about a Lulav whose leaves were fanning out on the upper part of the Lulav. He says you should bind them together. You should tie them up so that they are all together and not fanning out. My taima, lav mishum devoy hodr. Rabbi Yehuda's requirement of yagdenu, of tying them together, is it not because he wants the lulav to appear glorified? Lo, that's not his consideration, but rather kidiktoni taima, as the Tanaic source teaches. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Tarfon Kapos Tamorim Kofus. Kapos Tamorim, which is an expression in the Torah, means kofus, something tied together. V'im hoya porud yichaftenu. And if it were fanned out, separated, spread apart, bind it together. So the binding together, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, is to fulfill the Torah term kapos tamorim, and not a function of hodar, of it appearing nice or pleasant. We should have mentioned earlier, but the trapezoid shape is used to introduce these questions that seem to indicate that Rabbi Yehuda does require hodar by the lulav as well. So we encounter a second trapezoid or volcano shape. The lo boy hodar, is that really so that Rabbi Yehuda does not require hodar? The hotnan. Ein oydin es halulov ela b'minoi. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that when you tie together the lulav, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that lulav tzorech eged, it needs to be tied together, bound together with the other minim. Rabbi Yehuda says you can use only the same material as that which is kosher for the arba minim. You wouldn't be able to use a rubber band or, let's say, an oak wood or whatever. So Rabbi Yehuda's insistence on using same material for the binding, my taimo, why is that? Lav mishum deboy hodar, is it not because that is what will look nice? Lo, that's not his requirement. That's not his consideration. His consideration is not achieving niceness. As far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, Rava tells us you can use even sieve. It's part of the palm tree. It's a type of meshwork that grows within the bark of a palm tree, or you can use material coming from the trunk of the tree, the ikra didikla. And from the context of the Gemara, these materials will not enhance the look of the lulav, but they nevertheless are kosher. V'ela my time of the Rabbi Yehuda, so why does Rabbi Yehuda insist on only same variety material and not rubber bands or oak wood? The Gemara answers, Hosam, the kosovar lulav tzorech eged. It's because of Rav Yehuda's opinion that the eged, the binding together, is an integral part of the mitzvah. V'i maisi mino achrino, and if you were to bring, let us say, oak wood to and make strips of of a binding material out of oak wood, have luhu chamisha minim. That would constitute a fifth variety, and that would be adding to the Torah's four variety requirement. And as many of you are well aware, it is forbidden to add to that which the Torah dictates. If the Torah says four varieties constitute the mitzvah of lulav, it's four and not five. Hence, the eged being an integral part of the mitzvah, as far as Rabbi Huda is concerned, you must use only one of the four varieties of material, material coming from either willows or from myrtle branches or from palms or from the esrog, but not any other material. We continue. Rava mentioned that as far as the esrog is concerned, everyone holds, including Rabbi Yehuda, that it has to be hadar. And here we're bringing that into question. And as far as the structure is concerned, a house marking will figure in. And you can see on the side, under the Mivneh structure, these are kushios b'matora, these are questions, with the goal, the harois, to show, Sher Yehuda lo boy hodor be'esrog, v'kosha al rova, that Rabbi Yehuda does not require hodor by the esrog, and that would create a problem for rova. But now, I would like to mention, make an additional structural note. At this point, we have a Roman numeral number 2, and you can see 2 Aleph. The direction that we're taking right now is to suggest that Rabbi Yehuda does not require Hodar by the Esrog. When we get to Amud Beis, you'll see a base, also in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, like the Aleph, and there the Gemara flips around, the direction of the questioning flips around, where you can see the triangle there in the middle of Amud Beis, V'lo boy hodar, is that really so, that Rabbi Yehuda does not require the Esrog to be hodar? There the Gemara will be trying to say that Rabbi Yehuda does require the esrog to be hadar. As far as that line of questioning, Gemara will introduce a number of questions to try to prove that he requires hadar, but it will not be successful. So that's why we have a little aleph here, indicating the first direction is to suggest that Rabbi Yehuda does not require hadar by the esrog. And the base is in the opposite direction. There is much more detail to the structure as we go on that will become readily apparent. But right now, we're asking, is it so that Rabbi Yehuda requires the esrog to be hodar? And this is a long question. V'hotanyo, arbas minim shebululov. Take note of the fact that this is the first of the house markings, and that's indicated with our numbering to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, where we're going to try to show that he doesn't require the esrog to be hadar. Arboas minim shebelulav kashem she'ein pochasin mehen, the four varieties that constitute the mitzvah of lulav, just like you can't have less, kach ein mosifen alehen, you cannot have more either. Lo motza esrog. Let's say a person can't find an esrog. Nowadays, most of us are accustomed to having a plethora of esrogs of sorghum available. But there was a time, and even today, there are places that an esrog is hard to come by. So let's say you're there and you didn't find an esrog. Lo yavi. Don't bring lo porish v'lo rimon v'lo dover acher. Don't bring other varieties. A porish is another kind of fruit, and a rimon, and not anything else. Kmushin Ksherim, Yevashin Psulim. Kmushim, so Rashi gives you a French word for it. So it's not in the best of shape, we'll say, if it's kamush, but nevertheless it's kosher. If it's yavesh, if it's dried out, so it's pasul. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Yevashin. Yevashin are kosher. The Omer Rabbi Yehuda Maise Bivnei Krachim. an incident took place. Here we're at the top of Amud Beis. An incident took place in a city. B'nai Krochem, Rashi points out, it's a place where they didn't have pardesim. And they didn't have orchards, and Rashi says they didn't have palms over there. So it was so by the Bnei Krochim, she morishin es lulvehen livnei bnehen. They bequeathed their lulavim from one generation to the next. Amru lo, the Rabbanan heard that, they said misham raya, from there you're trying to bring proof. Ein shas hadchak raya. A situation of what we call shas hadchak, extenuating circumstances, that cannot serve as a proof to halacha. Katoni mihas, it does, however, say in this source, and this is just a quote from the source we just read, Reb Yehuda Omer, af yaveshim kshirim, dried out is also kosher. My lav, I esrog. When he says yaveshim kshirim, is he not referring to the esrog? And the truth is that simple reading of the source would have led one to say, yes, that when Rav Yehuda said afyavashin, he was referring to the esrog. The Gemara says, no, that comment of Rav Yehuda was lo alulav. He was referring specifically to the lulav. That a lulav that's yavesh, that's okay. But an esrog that's yavesh would not be okay. And that is in conformity to Rava. You notice we have a bracketed section. If you skip the brackets, you'll see Toshma. We pick up again with the same line of questioning. And just read it just to keep the flow intact. Toshma, Esrog HaYoshan Posel, Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. Here we have a Yoshan means an old Esrog. An old Esrog, you can rest assured, is not Hodar. It's dried out. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher. Tiyufta de Rava, is this not a refutation of Rava? Tiyufta, it certainly is. So at this point, we see that Rava's point, that everyone, including Rabbi Yehuda, would agree that an esrog needs to be hadar, is simply not accurate. Now, we did have a bracketed section. Let's go over it. On the side, under our Mivneh heading, the double underline is indicated. Omar Mar means quotes. These are tzitutim mitoch ha-braisa besof Omed Aleph. These are quotes from the Tanaic source that we started at the bottom of Omed Aleph. Omar Mar. Kishem shein pochasim mehem kach ein mosifin aleim. Just like you can't have less than the four varieties for your mitzvah, we have an esrog, a lulav, hadasim, and aravos. So just like you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah with less, you also are not allowed to add more. The Gemara says, pshita. That's obvious. The Gemara says, mahu detemo. Without being told this, I would have thought, hoyol v'yom Rabbi Yehuda lulav tzarech eged. Since Rabbi Yehuda holds that part of the mitzvah of lulav is binding the minim, the different varieties, together. V'imaisi mino achrino. And if one were to bring an additional variety, I might have imagined legally, hai lichudei koi, v'hai lichudei koi, that the four stand by themselves, and this fifth one stands outside, stands by itself, and it doesn't interfere with my mitzvah of Arbas Haminim. Komash Malon, so our source is telling me that we don't adopt that analysis. And even if you don't bind it together, but you take it together, you still are not Yotze. You're not fulfilling the mitzvah, or you're not allowed to do that. Just for the sake of accuracy, I would like to go over this last point, adding that which Rashi said. What was the Havamina of that? What would I have thought had I not been told Kach Ein Mosifan Aleihem? So I would have thought that since Rabbi Yehuda says Lulav Tzarech Eged, and if I would bring a fifth variety, and here Rashi says a fifth variety and not tie it in with the lulav and the hadasim and aravos. So its presence would be considered as if it was separate. Hai l'chudei koi v'hai l'chudei koi. Komash malam, so the source is telling me that we wouldn't be looking at it like that. Namely, the fact that the basic required minim are bound together and this is not bound with it, that would can be considered as if it's a total outsider, but rather the fact that you're taking it together with the rest ruins the mitzvah. And hence, we're told, kach ein mosifin alehin. Omar mar, lo motza esrog, lo yovi, lo rimon, velo porish, velo dover acher. We were taught that if you didn't come upon an esrog, you didn't acquire an esrog, you couldn't find an esrog, so don't bring something else instead. Pshita, well, that's obvious. The Torah specifies an esrog. Mahu detemo. So I might have thought, lysi, bring another. I mean, if you don't have an esrog, you couldn't find one, so bring a pomegranate. Ki hechidolo tishkach toras esrog. So that you wouldn't forget that there's a concept of an esrog. There's a concept of having another fruit. That if you would have, let's say, only the lulav and hadas marumas, so people might think that's all there is to the mitzvah. So wouldn't it be better to at least have a fourth item, even if it's not an esrog? Komash molon zimnin denofik churba minei the osi lemisrach. We're telling you, the Rabbonin are telling us that though that might have been a consideration, there's a stronger anti-consideration or opposite consideration that if this year you are bringing a pomegranate because you couldn't find an esrog, next year when maybe esrogim are available, people will say, well, last year we used a pomegranate, let's use one this year as well. And people will come, the misrach means to continue in that mistaken fashion. So better to, as we say, shevi al tase, just don't do anything. Don't bring a fourth variety if it's not the one, the esrog, that is required. Toshma. Now we read this earlier, but we'll read it again. We're going back to the issue of Rabbi Yehuda's approach to esrog and its need to be hodar. Rava claimed that everyone, including Rita, says that esrog must be hodar. Here we're questioning that. The source says esrog hayoshan, an old esrog, pasul. Rabbi Yehuda Matzriv says an old esrog is okay, and the old esrog is not going to be hodar. It's not going to be pleasant, nice looking. Tiufta de Rava, tiufta. This then is a refutation of Rava. Rava claimed that esrog, everyone, including Rabbi Yehuda, requires hodar, and here you see, not so. And now we ask from the other direction, the low boy hodor. And is it so that Rabbi Yehuda does not require hodor? The direction this question would be taking would actually to bolster Rava's original point that Rabbi Yehuda does require hodor by the esrog. And now a series of questions that will show, that will attempt to show, that he does require hodor. And that's what the diamonds will introduce on the side of them under the Mivneh. We indicate these are Kushios, Laharos, Rabbi Yehuda, Boy, Hodor, Be'esrog, Afoko, Echod, Nidche. Each one of these questions will be rejected. So, we continue. Vohanatnan. But do we have the following source? Hayoro Kikarsi, Rabbi Meir, Machshir, Rabbi Yehuda, Posel. An Esrog, whose color is Kikarsi. Karsi is a type of deep green color. So an esrog that is, technically speaking, karsi is the name of a vegetable that has that color. So if it's as green as karsi, Rabbi Yehuda says it's no good, it's posel. Lav mishum deboy hodor, is it not because he requires it to be something special in its pleasant appearance, and yorok kakarsi would be a lacking in that? So you see that Rabbi Yehuda does require hodor by the esrog. The Gemara says, lo, that's not the reason. Mishum de lo gemar pura. If the esrog is still deep green, it's simply an indication that it hasn't completed in its maturation. And the Torah says, pre-eitz hodor. It has to have the status of a pre, and if it's if you like this pun, this cross-language pun, if it's premature, hope that's not too confusing, if it's not ready yet, so it's not fulfilling the pira requirement. So once again, it's not a function of its lack in Hadar, but simply because it's not what the Torah expects when it says to bring a fruit, and that's something that's not developed yet. Ta Shema. Well, I will try again to show you that he requires Hadar. Shir Esrog cotton, the minimum size Esrog, Rimei Omer Ke'egois, would be the size of a nut, and Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kebeitza, it must be at least the size of an egg. Now, why is he requiring that size? Lav Mishum de Boy Hadar, is it not because he requires it to be Hadar? Lo, that's not his reason. Mishum de Lo, Gemar Pura. Just like we said before, it's still not fully developed. Toshma, the Gemara again tries to show that he requires Hadar. And here we're going to try from the maximum size of an Esrog. It says, Ubegodoil, the maximum size, Kedeshi, Yechois, Shnayim, Biodo, Achas, Divrei Biyuda. The dash underlining, as is always the case, is to emphasize the main words of the source that are relevant to our discussion. So we're told here that the maximum size, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, would be that you could hold two in one hand. If the Esrogim would be larger, so that you wouldn't be able to hold two of them in one hand, it would be disqualified, be too large. My taimo, lav mishum deboy hoder, is it not because he requires it to be pleasant, and if it's oversized, so it wouldn't be pleasant? Lo, that's not his reason. Rather, kevon di omar rova, lulav biyamin vesrog bismol. Since there is a rule that, as Rava reports, that the lulav is to be held in your right hand, and the esrog held in your left hand, and that's the way you fulfill the mitzvah. Zimnin de mechlifi leiv osi lafuchinu vasi lefsule. Sometimes a person might pick up the lulav and esrog in the opposite hands, and he'll have to switch them around. And if it's too large, if the esrog is too large, it'll end up falling, and if it falls and a piece of it breaks off, it'll become unfit, it'll become puzzle. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is insistent that it be small enough that you'll be able to maneuver the two in the case that they get switched around. V'ela, L'Rebbe Yehuda, Hogsiv Hodar. If so, that Rabbi Yehuda then does not require Hodor by the Esrog, what about the fact that the Torah refers to it as Hodor? The Gemara says, Hahu, the word Hodor in the Torah does not mean glorified, but rather Hador be'ilonoi mishana l'shana. The Torah wants me to bring a type of fruit that lasts on the tree from one year to the next. And that is something peculiar or special by the Esrog, that it will start developing on a tree in one season or on 1 year, and it'll still be on the tree the next year. So Hador literally means it dwells on the tree. And so the word Hador has to do with dwelling, as opposed to Hodor, as opposed to glorified. Shel Asherah, Shel Irhani Dachas. The Gemara at this point, and we indicate in our Nosei, our topic heading, that this discussion goes to Lamed Beis on the base. We have a long section of Gemara that deals with Birur Psule Lulav Hamuzkar B'Mishnah. The Mishnah mentioned many different disqualifying factors with regard to a lulav, and so the Gemara will be focusing on these details till Lamed Beis Amid Beis. So the Mishnah had mentioned Shel Asherah Pasul. shall asherah v'shel ir hanidachas a lulav that comes from an asherah. That asherah is a tree that was worshipped in idolatry, and ir hanidachas is a lulav that's found in a city that was guilty of idol worship. And the rule is, with regard to such cities, all the contents, the portables found in that city must be destroyed. We continue in the Gemara. V'shel asherah apostle, is that really so, that a lulav taken from a palm tree that was worshipped is unfit? V'amar Rava, lulav shel avodah zorah lo yitoil, v'im notal kosher. The lulav that was part of idolatry, it was avodah zorah, you shouldn't take it. It's, as Rashi says, mo'is, it's disgusting. It has a spiritually, it's disgusting. It's disgusting to be used l'gvoah for on high for the Almighty. So don't take it. But if you did, kosher, you have fulfilled the mitzvah. Now, Rashi adds information. He says, even though it's known that idolatry or idols are forbidden to benefit from, in other words, it's osur behanah, on the other hand, we know that mitzvahs lav lehenis nitnu. Mitzvahs were not given to us for the purpose of pleasure and benefit, and therefore, this wouldn't be in contradiction to the concept of avodah zorah being osur bahanah. So, what do we see from here? That a lulav that was used in idolatry is okay. So why? How are we to understand this in light of the Mishnah that says the Asherah lulav is not okay? The Gemara answers, Haha, in our Mishnah, we're talking about, our Mishnah says you're not Yotzi with an Asherah lulav, Asherah de Moshe Askinon. This is referring to the idolatrous trees that were growing in the land of Israel at the time the Jews conquered the land. Regarding those trees, specifically the trees that were used in idolatry at the time of the land of the conquest of Israel, the Torah says, "Vashirehem tisrafun bo'esh." Their idol trees, idolatrous trees, must be burnt. And we know that the lulav has a minimum size requirement. Therefore, if you are going to take a lulav from a tree that needs to be burnt, so in your mind's eye, something that stands to be burnt is considered as if it is already burnt. It's just a heap of ash. And that is expressed by the Gemara in the following, the Kitusei Mechtas Shiure. Its shiur is smashed. Its shiur, its size, is ruined. Once again, since the Asherah of Moshe is a tree that is required to be burnt, not like standard avodah zarah. Standard idolatry is simply something you're not allowed to benefit from, but there's no dictate that it must be burnt. This Asherah, the Asherah of Moshe, which is the Asherah featured in our Mishnah, is a tree that needs to be burnt, and therefore it doesn't have the minimum in theory, it doesn't have the minimum lulav size requirement. Daika nami, and through careful reading of the Mishnah, you can see that that is the kind of asherah we are referring to, the kind that needs to be burnt. Tikotoni tumya dirhani dachas, because it teaches asherah in the context of irhani dachas. What do we know about irhani dachas? We know that the items, the portables in such a city, need to be burnt. Shema Amina, so this is proof that the Asherah referred to in our Mishnah is also that kind of Asherah that needs to be burnt, and hence it's posel as a lulav. Niktam Roshay. In the Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that we've been using since the beginning of the Masechta, the Pirush Chai Sefer, in illustration 423, which you'll find on page 87 of the Pirush Chai, you have an illustration. There are a couple of opinions that are illustrated, but the idea of Niktam Rosha, where the the top of the lulav is cut off. Omar Rav Huna lo shanu elo niktam. The Mishnah is telling us that niktam is not good, aval nisdak kosher. But if it were cracked, and as far as nisdak is concerned, so there's a Rashi says nistiku roshei ha'olim, the tops of the leaves split. There's an illustration of the Rashi Pshat 445 in the Pirush Chai, and this you'll find later on page 91 of what this might look like. So Rav Huna says that if that's the situation, if it's nisdak, if it's cracked or split in that fashion, it's kosher. The Gemara asks for nisdak kosher. Is that really so? V'hotanya. Do we not have the following Tanaic source? Lulav, kofuf, kovutz, soduk, okum doimilamagal, posel, horus, posel, doimilachorus, kosher. There are a lot of details in this source. And if you look through the Pirush Chai, you can find illustrations of these things. But what we have to do right now is focus on that which is pertinent, directly pertinent to us, and that is that in this source you see that which we dashed underlined, soduk, and it says posel. Omar Rav Papa, the Ovid Kehemnik. When the source says that split is posel, that's if it appears like a hemnik. And now, a hemnik, there's a Rashi explains that he uses a French word, but it's illustrated, at least in the Pirush Chai, in illustration 466. There's an illustration in the Rabbeinu Hananel, and if you look through the Pirush Chai, you'll find different commentaries as to what hemnik might be. But whatever the case is, it's a type of split that is different than that which you saw illustrated in 455. So as we said, if you contrast 455, illustration 455, with 466, and by the way, illustration 466, you can find on page 94 of the Pirush Chai. That's that kind of split, which makes it look like a type of fork. That is unfit. That's what the source was saying was posel. Okum doime lamago. This is a quote. You can see we have a little arrow taken, this quote from the source right at the top line. And here we can make reference to illustration 453 that you can see on page 92. Okum, it's bent like a magol. Magol is that type of harvesting tool, a sickle, in picture 454. The Gemara continues with comments of Rava regarding psulei lulav, and that's what the double underline is here to accentuate. Omar Rava, loy amoron elo lefonov, the psul of bent, of okum, is only if it's bent lefonov. An illustration of lefonov is in 457, where the spine is facing you, and it's bent in such a way, lefonov, literally toward its front, where the spine you can view as, let's say, the back of the lulav, that you may say a person's spine and is in his back. So the bending away is bending forward, toward the face, if you will. That is what's posel. Avol le'acharov, Rava says, if it's bent backwards, as would be illustrated in 458, baraisei means that's a normal way of lulav growth. And since it's within the realm of normalcy, it's kosher. Omar Rav Nachman, litzdodin, kilofonov domi. One approach says that litzdodin, that's what we saw illustrated in 453. that is, according to the first version, considered like Lefonav and Posel. The Amri law, another version is Kila Achrov Domi, it would be considered like bent back and kosher. The Omar Rava, Hai Luva the Solik Bechad Hutza, 464. What do we see in this? This is at the bottom of page 93. You have the lulav leaves growing only from one side of the spine. That's the solik bechad hutza. Baal mumhu, it's considered blemished, uposel, and unfit. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.